Mr. Taylor, one. Where were you born, please?
Monmouth, in Monmouthshire.
Which year was this?
1924.
Huh? Did both your mother and father come from Monmouth?
My father was from London. Mother was born in Monmouth. And her father was mayor of Monmouth for 4 years.
What was her maiden name?
Edwards. Edwards, her name. Marjorie Edwards.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Monmouth?
Yes.
How old were you when you finished school?
I had to finish at 13 because my father went on a walk and left us, and I had to leave school at 13 to get some money into the house.
So you left school before the war started?
Yes.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I had a job, and the last job was compulsory. I was sent to a sawmills at Tinton.
Why was it compulsory?
Oh, they just said that when I went to get another job, they just said that you will go to Tinton to the sawmills and work there, and 8 hours a day, and I had to cycle 11 miles there and 11 back at night.
Why should you not have had a choice about which job you were doing?
No, they told me it was a national service job, and I had to go.
So war had already broken out?
Yeah.
So you were conscripted to do industrial work?
Yes. Yes. This was cutting boards for army huts.
What was the job like?
Oh, it wasn't bad. There were good people there, and it was open and peaceful, and there we are.
How old were you at that time when you were doing that job?
15, I think.
So it was right at the beginning of the war?
Yes.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, yes, yes.
How did you feel about the news?
Well, I mean, at my age, I thought, well, I might have to be called up, but it would be some time. I joined the Home Guard. I used to do that at night.
What did it involve?
Oh, going down and walking around the town on patrols, and we had the American rifles from the First War, long ones, and had 5 rounds of ammunition. And we were supposed to be protecting the town from a German parachute.
What was the Home Guard unit called?
Oh, just Monmouth Home Guard.
What type of people were in it?
Oh, the lads, and we had one who was 80. When we went on a march, he used to be half a mile behind.
Why?
Well, poor chap was 80, and we knew that they'd march us to a pub out of about 3 or 4 miles. We knew we were always marched to a pub, and we used to go as fast as we could, and this 80-year-old used to linger behind her because of his age.
Did you enjoy being in the Home Guard?
Well, it was. We knew we hadn't got the weapons that we should have for it. We had an Austin 7, which was our armoured car. And I used to sit in the back with a Lewis gun, and I had a big fat man behind, sitting by the side of me. I couldn't get out of the car till he did. And that was our armoured car, that was our protection for the town.
Did you get any military training with the Home Guard?
Yes, a small amount, yes. Yeah, yeah.
What did that involve?
Martin, arms drill and maneuver sort of thing outside town. And, but we didn't think we thought we'd do something, but we knew we couldn't stand up against any enemy that came, any trained enemy that came down with all their training and everything.
Did you get practice firing the rifle?
Yes.
Were there any German air raids in your area?
Well, not air raids on us, but people used to drop, we had them come over on their way back, and they used to drop bombs at isolated places, and we went up to see the bomb craters, and the and a bull chased us, so that was worse than the bombs.
What happened to you next?
Oh, I was called up. I was told it was a reserved occupation at Tinton, and I could stay there, but I wanted to go into the service because all my friends had already gone. Joined the RAF and Royal Navy Fleet, the Fleet Air Arm, and I got called up. I'd already been down to Cardiff and tried to get into the Royal Air Force, but they told me to come back when I was 18. And 2 months before I was 18, I was called up for the army. So that was it. I wanted to get into air crew, but there we are.
So what happened next once you were called up?
I went to Brecon, a camp at Brecon, and it was beginning of December. And come Christmas Eve, there were about 1,000 of us there. Come Christmas Eve, the 42, the everybody vanished. They'd gone home without leave. And I went down for breakfast at about 20 chaps that were left, and I didn't know. And we got down to the dining hall, and I say it was empty, and the cook said to us, "How many eggs do you want? You can have as many as you like." He said, "The rest have gone." And they had. They'd gone over the wall, as they say.
Were they punished?
No, there were too many of them to punish. They all came back the day after, and we had training. They used to take us out on PT in the mornings with no tops on, just shorts and PT shoes. And this PT sergeant used to take us out, and it was snowing. And he said, "It'll harden you, toughen you up." So we used to have half an hour in out in the snow, just running about. And he took us on rifle training and marches and all kinds of things. And I was posted in Brecon to Chester.
Did you cope with the basic training?
Yes. I posted to Chester from there, and I was posted to the Manchester Regiment, and did the training with them, and they we got down south, and to Faversham in Kent, and the just before the invasion, the Monty came back from the desert, And he decided that we were on 20mm guns, our section in the Manchesters. Then there was a section of Vickers guns. And he decided that there was no need for our 20mm guns, light attack, so we were posted away from Manchester.
Which battalion of the Manchesters were you in?
It was a unit, actually. It wasn't a battalion. It was actually a unit of the Manchesters. They never gave us a battalion name, and they, as I say, were posted with another chap to, we were all posted to different infantry divisions.
Were you with the Manchesters very long?
Nine months, I'd say.
Any incidents that happened to you when you were with them?
Well, I learned to drive, and we used to go out on exercises with these guns and on the backs of the trucks, and we never got into any action against anything and never saw anything to fire at, and they we went up to the Midlands, and we were there were eight of us in this. We were in different tents, bell tents, on the side of the road, out in the country, and on our right was a large aerodrome, the American aerodrome, the Flying Fortresses. And they used to take off each morning, and this one morning we were asleep, it was around 5:30. And one blew up with its bombs. And our tent, we were below the level of the aerodrome by about 8 feet. And the blast blew the top of the tent over and blew us around inside. And this this Flying Fortress had smoke coming from it. They were all bombed up from the day before. And it had smoke coming from it, and the fire brigade came out to it. And the sergeant stopped the fire engine some distance from the burning fortress, and he went in alone. He went in actually inside the aircraft, and it blew up. And the Americans told us in the evening that the 100-foot crater where the fortress had been. And this sergeant, of course, was, I don't think they even found him.
Where did this happen?
Oh, no,
did you say the Midlands?
Yes. Where the bomber stations are, there's several bomber stations together.
In Oxfordshire?
That's up higher than that.
Never mind, anyway.
And there's several bomber stations in the area, and we drove back down from there back to Herne Bay, and I was the postings came shortly afterwards, and the to different infantry regiments, and I would have preferred to stay with the Vickers guns, but the if I could have, because I liked the chaps I was with, and they anyway we got posted to infantry, and I another chap, he and myself, we were posted to the 1st Battalion, the HLI.
So with the Manchesters, You were equipped with Vickers machine guns.
Vickers machine gun and 20mm anti-aircraft, and that was a lot that was dissolved because it was thought there was no need for it.
Were you on the Vickers guns or on?
I was on the 20mm.
So you were in a light anti-aircraft role?
Yes. But as I say, when we got over the other side, we had the Manchesters with us, and I met quite a few of my friends that I'd been with in the Manchesters. I met them supporting us. Right up through to Germany, they were still, and they stood at the side of the road the last day of the war and looking at our battalion as we went up. Well, I'll call it a battalion. There were 30 of us out of 112 in our company. And we went up this road and to the Autobahn between Bremen and Hamburg. And they were standing at the side of the road, and some of the Manchesters, and they looked along the men, and they saw me, and they said, they shouted, I knew they couldn't kill him. I knew they wouldn't hurt him. And that was my Manchester's men.
So you were transferred to the 1st Battalion of the HLI.
Yes.
Where did you find them?
Down in Kent at Sittingbourne.
What kind of reception did you get from the HLI?
Well, the Major was very nice. And a nice man. We had a long talk with him, and I was put down into a hut. And first thing was, the Major gave me a guard, a bodyguard, a big Piper McLaren. He said, you're to look after this man. He said, if any of them start anything, he says, you're to take care of.
If any of who starts?
The Scotsman. Oh, yes. Sassenach, they called you Sassenach. Because you weren't Scottish, you know.
Were you badly treated by them?
No, I wasn't badly treated, but it wasn't the same as being with the Manchesters. But I soon made some friends, and we got on all right. And we were out on parade one morning, because it was in the middle of a woods. It was just a open space from the middle of a woods, the camp, and we had a flying bomb come over. And going the wrong way. It was going out from England, going down Kent. And a typhoon came after it. And unfortunately, the typhoon was higher than us, higher than the flying bomb. So when he opened fire, all the rounds came along the camp. So we dispersed quickly, and I was under the bed in the hut. And it didn't hit the thing, and it went off down to Kent. It was going back to France again. Something had actually turned it, so it was going the wrong way, this flying bomb. And it went back over and disappeared. So the only thing I can hope is that it went back where it came from. But I mean, we had 15-mile marches on every Tuesday, and 30 miles every Thursday. And if you could get on guard duty, it meant you stayed on camp. So there were volunteers to stay on camp. And we had exercises on the South Downs for a fortnight, and where you slept out in the open with one blanket, and we went out on one morning, and we met up with some other, with another infantry regiment, and they, the objective was a woods called Horseshoe Woods, at the back of Lewis up on the downs. And we were second lot to go in. And the 25 pounders were firing in front of the regiment, in front of us. And they advanced as the regiment did, so the shells advanced 150 yards, 100 yards. And the leading regiment got into the hut, into the forest, woods, and they fired a red very light to show they were in there. And the artillery captain didn't see the flare. And another lot of 25 pounders went over and landed on the regiment and killed 8 and wounded some 12. And the captain was cashiered out of the army with, I think they call it ignominy. And that was the end of that exercise. But we were put onto emergency rations up on this exercise on 2 weeks. And we were getting a wee bit hungry, so we saw a house or a building over some distance away. And we sent a chappie along the hedges with some money. And he was gone some time. Came back with a pound of cheese, a loaf of bread, and some butter. And we, meanwhile, entered a garden. And lifted some onions. So we had onion and cheese sandwiches and a cup of tea. And the exercise went on and on, and we had a lank come back from over the other side, and they'd either forgotten to drop the leaflets, or they hadn't known where to drop them, and they dropped the whole lot on us. So we had thousands of leaflets coming down, and they were supposed to be dropped over in France. And I say we got back from the exercise, and we went into more training and more marches and more exercise. And we heard one morning that of the landing in Normandy, and we had to get rid of anything personal that we had. We weren't allowed to take anything personal. And just the army stuff, and we were put on the train, and they locked the doors, and we, but first of all at the station, when we arrived at the station, a small crowd had got there, and the one woman came up to me, she said, "Aren't you, glad to be going at last?" So I thought of what was ahead, and I said no. And I'm not glad, but I'd do it. And she looked most peeved because I'd said that I wasn't all that glad to be shot at. And
which station was this?
Sittingbourne Station. And we got on the train, and as I said, they locked the doors, but they forgot that the windows came down, because we weren't supposed to get off the train. And we got down to Netheravon, and we boarded the small steamer, the Ben McCree. And
where did you board the ship? Where did you board the ship?
In Netheravon, New Haven Harbour. And we sailed that evening with down to Portsmouth from New Haven, and met up with a whole lot of other ships, and sailed across, halfway across the channel, and we had to, the ship stopped, and we, they opened a, I don't know whether you call it a door, further down the ship's side. And a landing craft came alongside, and they put a plank across. And we had to walk the plank. But first of all, we had 50 pounds in weight. I had a Bren gun. We had 50 odd pounds in weight, and we were told to undo a belt and epaulets in case we fell in the sea with 50 pounds of equipment. And we were told to just let it go. And But none of us fancied falling between the landing craft and our ship, because every now and again it was moving nearer to the ship. And we didn't fancy being caught between the two.
Where did you land?
First of all, we passed a Norwegian destroyer, which had been hit in the middle with by a torpedo, and it had broken right through the centre, and both halves of the ship were sticking up out of the sea in a V shape. It belonged to the Norwegian Navy. It was an E-boat had hit it with a torpedo and cut it right in half, but it looked just like a V-shape. We landed at Courcelles on Juno Beach, and we got onto a sandbar in the landing craft, and went onto the sandbar and stuck, and they opened up the ramp, and I went right up to my nose, literally right up to my nose in water.
How tall were you then?
Same as now, 5 foot six, something like that. And my feet went down in the sand, and I was holding the Bren above the head with both hands, and the seawater was coming back from the beach. It was going in my mouth and in the nose. And I tried to get ashore, and my feet weren't working. The others were going with their rifles. And in the end, the beachmaster spotted me, and he sent this Canadian soldier, big chap, to pull me out, and we got ashore, and in the sunshine, of course soaking wet, and there were some isolated graves up back from the sand dunes, German and British, and Oh yes, the thing I forgot was the battleship was firing when we were coming ashore in the landing craft. The battleship was firing its big guns, and we felt that the landing craft lifted up every time it fired the guns. And they were firing some 10 to 12 mile inland. And anyway, we got ashore.